Hello, BattleTech fans. This is the Renegade HPG podcast. I'm Travis, and today I'm going to be talking with one of BattleTech's greatest visual creators, Jeff Lovenstein. Jeff's artwork helped define the look of BattleTech as he inked countless illustrations for the universe in its first decade. Those illustrations breathed life into the characters and gave its environment the gritty, dirty, barely held together with duct tape feeling that first captured our imaginations. In this episode, we're going to take a trip back to those early days of BattleTech as Jeff regales us with stories of his creations and his time contributing to this universe. Jeff, thanks for joining me.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Definitely. This is going to be exciting. I remember distinctly, I was introduced to BattleTech when I was probably 11 or 12 by my stepbrothers, and was and spent most of my time creating things in my head and not necessarily playing with other people. And so there was a lot of time building Mech Warriors through the, Mech Warrior RPG, just building the characters just for the fun of it and drawing kind of my version of the illustrations. And it was funny when I picked up my copy of the original Mech Warrior a couple of weeks ago, I was thumbing through and it was crazy how familiar some of your illustrations were. When I was kind of thumbing through, I was like, I remember staring at this illustration for long periods of time. Yeah, I look forward to we'll pull up some of those later in this podcast, but I want to get a little background. I love hearing a little history about the early days of BattleTech. At what point in the kind of development process were you brought on the team? How early were you Battle Droids or was it BattleTech by the time you made your way there?
Battle Droids had come and gone. BattleTech had just been released, I believe. FASA was still doing Doctor Who, Star Trek, and they were having success with the BattleTech tabletop game, doing grassroots sort of store visits and demos at shows and things like that on the weekends. They had a team that was going out to help promote the game and teach people how to play it. And they had decided to create an RPG aspect of it as well. And I had probably been at the company 6 months or so before that began rolling and becoming a project. In fact, that was the first really big project that I stuck my teeth into. I have a lot of illustrations in my book. Prior to that, I was doing random stuff for, like I said, Star Trek and Doctor Who. I was drawing hex maps. I was doing, graphic design, however I could help out with the various game lines. But Mech Warrior was the place where we got to imagine how the pilots lived, what they did when they were out of their mechs. And I found it a really rich and fun world to visit. We had books on Vietnam and World War II and such, and so we'd be flipping through there trying to find stuff that would help give a sense of place and urgency and grit, like you're saying, to the imagery so that they would look like war-torn, weary characters. And I think some of that comes through in those drawings. Certainly drawing up a chewed up mech is a heck of a lot more fun than drawing a shiny, brand new vehicle.
I agree. I started a community fund last year where we kind of try to pool, small contributions from a large number of people to go out and try and find some artists outside of the BattleTech universe to kind of come in and give their kind of take on it. And it's been quiet for a while because it's way harder than I thought to track down professional concept artists that can spare a day or two to kind of do do a commission. I've got a lot kind of on the hook, kind of ready to reel in, I hope. And part of the mission of that has been to kind of, go back to getting a little bit more kind of gritty day in the life images and not just kind of shiny mech shooting on the battlefield. And that's part of why kind of certainly, your work is some of my favorite kind of in those early days. I'm curious, in terms of that crafting those visuals, how much, at what point had Jordan and Ross, is it Ross, Russ? I always confuse the Mech Warriors, CEO, the Piranha Game CEO with BattleTech's original. But how much direction did they give you before you just kind of like, all right, take the ball and show us what this universe is like? And
almost none. We had some of Dietrich's, Dave Dietrich was doing marker concept drawings. Mm-hmm. And so we wanted to have depict the characters in those uniforms so that they made sense connectually. But chewing up the walls, graffiti, all that sort of stuff was me trying to create a sense of place. Yeah. And we were all trying to put ourselves into it. We had an awful lot of freedom in that regards. And so as an illustrator, you felt that you were creating visual narratives rather than writing text. And you wanted people to look at a picture and think that and realize that it was part of a bigger whole. This guy has an object that he got from someplace. You know, he got this book from this library, so we had to go to the library to get it. Or he's got a sandwich and he got it from the restaurant down the street. Or he's got patches of bands that you've never heard of, but he's a big fan. But you wanted to help create a bigger world besides just the picture that you were drawing. And we tried to bring that to the table as often as possible.
Definitely. And who, you know, as I was trying to go through the source books and kind of find kind of your intro exit in terms of where you were in the development process, you know, were there more on the team, or did the team of artists and contributors kind of build over time while you were there?
When I walked in the door, Mitch O'Connell had just left as the art director. Dana was the art director. Todd Marsh was the jack of all trades, super busy illustrator. He drew all sorts of stuff. And I came in as the third guy. And so I was doing as much of the imagery as was needed. We'd get a page or two of text, you draw something appropriate, keep moving. And we would, you know, the books would go to the press every 3-4 weeks. And so there was a definite time crunch on everything as well. So you're trying to work as well as you could, as quickly as you could. Yeah. Over time, as the games built and the volume of publications increased, we needed more people to join in. So you found people like Rick Harris, who had been doing stuff for GDW's Challenge Worlds and Traveler and the various games they were doing. Tim Bradstreet, kid just out of high school. He was a buddy of Steve Venters, who painted a lot of the covers. So those guys from Normal came up with Steve, and Tim started doing all sorts of work for us. Rick was doing all sorts of work for us. Steve Bryant did some work. Certainly Venters painted several of the iconic paintings that you guys know. He did the Battletech blueprints that everybody loved.
Yep.
And he did a lot of work for Shadowrun as well. But we expanded and looked for people that would fit in at every opportunity. Mike Jackson was a terrific find. He tells great stories visually with his work, and he's got a really unique, distinct style. Jen Alessio didn't do a lot of Battletech work, but she was a real find, and her work is all over Shadowrun, for example.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're all, at any opportunity, whether you're at Gen Con or people sending submissions, when you see something that you know would fit, you try to make that happen. And you try to let them, you let these artists express themselves and add to the universe as well. Peter Bergting from Sweden. He's a big-time comic guy working with the Nolan Company these days, but he was cutting his teeth on the RPGs. Larry McDougall did a bunch of really gritty pieces here and there for Battletech and Shadowrun and Earth. So when we found guys that we could rely on, we used them a lot. Jim Holloway, he painted that cover, very memorable cockpit scene. And he had been doing work for TSR for years, but you know, he did a lot of the iconic pieces for Battletech and for Renegade Legion. And he painted, I think, for all of our lines at one point or another. He did the Black Widow, for example, for Renegade Legion. He did Natasha Kerensky for Battletech. And he did the MechWarrior cover, I should say.
Yeah. Yeah, his cover for Tales of Black Widow is probably my favorite Battletech illustration. It's just, even though it's funny, there's nothing Battletech in the background. It's just kind of like generic mecha, but it is iconic. And
it was sassy as hell.
It was great. Curious.
We even had somebody like Boris Vallejo painted book covers for us, for gosh sakes.
Yeah.
I remember sending those out. So, Battletech spread its net wide, trying to find talent.
That's awesome.
We were lucky with the guys we brought in. Certainly, Jim and Joel did a hell of a lot of work for us once they joined the staff.
Yep, I had a chance to chat with Joel. That was a fun conversation. And I'd like to, you know, I've been kind of trading emails with Jim as well and trying to get him on for a future episode. I'm curious, was there an early illustration that kind of stands out to you where you're just like, you know, this is it. I've kind of nailed it, you know, and, you know, this
is the first one that comes to mind with MechWarrior is the guy with his flipping, it's like a medical scene. There's a guy, he's sort of in an alcove. He's got this weird sort of foam cast on his leg and he's being attended to. I thought that was a really strong drawing. There's a MechWarrior helmet somewhere. It says K. Stein on the top, which is a nod to Kevin Stein. He used to work with us, but the guy's all desiccated. Very strong has come to mind. The Archer being worked on that I worked on for ages. Yeah, it's a great big vellum drawing. And the background never got completed. We just ran out of time. It had to go. So it went.
That's my favorite. That was a lot of fun. Yeah, that's. I think that was the first time that you know, we had exchanged messages on Twitter was because I that was one of my kind of early favorites of just that day in the life, and it was a inspiration for one of the early Gallery 3025 kind of designs that we did. We did kind of like a modern update. That was a very fun piece. But and one of the things that I love about that piece as well is it's just the scale is right on. You know, and there's a lot, especially kind of in the kind of the middle history of BattleTech, where scale was kind of thrown out the window. And I just love that it's just right on, you know, it's at that, you know, 10, 11 meter mark, you know, where some of these machines look like they might be three times that. And it's just like, it's there, it has that kind of gritty, you know, what can we do to piece this thing together with what we got type of feeling. So that was a great one. Yeah. And well, it's
kind of a Mad Max spin on everything. Totally. Things were cobbled together out on the edges.
Speaking of Mad Max, were there kind of creative universes that inspired you guys with BattleTech? You know, I know people have talked a lot before about how, you know, Lucas's Star Wars was kind of like a first look into a future that was kind of dirty and gritty and not kind of pristine and shiny. You know, and I know Ridley Scott has talked a lot about that with when he was coming up with Alien. I'm curious, were there genres that you know were specific inspirations of like, all right, this is kind of the direction we want to go and we want to kind of...
Well, I would say, Ron Cobb's industrial design on the spaceships and Alien certainly mm-hmm. resonate on the interiors of the various BattleTech pieces we've done. I know Mad Max certainly is reflected in some of the chewed up, cobbled together MechWarrior ensembles that we draw from time to time. Heavy Metal Magazine, the French comics, Inky Bilal, all of that had an impact. It may not be super obvious, but all, you know, that's pretty near future sensibility did filter in to BattleTech and to Shadowrun and such. Yeah, there weren't a lot of big mecha movies to watch. RoboJocks came out after BattleTech. I
remember that being, RoboJocks.
Impactful.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I don't think any of us actually saw the movie. We had the poster.
You did yourself a service. Talk about a campy one. That was. It's been a long time since I watched that, probably 30 years.
I did like Pacific Rim and thought, hey.
Yeah.
That's pretty damn close.
Definitely. Yeah, we've had some fun podcasts lately with Sam Lewis, and he often, you know, references Pacific Rim as kind of like, you know, the closest he's seen on the big screen for mech movement, just maybe scaled up a little bit.
Yeah, the scale was a little big, but the Japanese monster movies keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger. You know, King Kong's become huge.
Yeah. It's funny seeing Godzilla. You see the pictures of the Godzilla size scale of the Godzilla from like the 50s up to the modern one. It's just like, Jesus, guys on steroids. It's
gigantic.
Yeah. Too funny. One thing in terms of when from the business side, I assume making that decision to find the Helm memory core and start to update technology and things start to get a little bit cleaner and shinier. Kind of what was kind of going on, you know, in the decision making behind the scenes, you know, assuming that you were still there as BattleTech was getting away from that kind of dirty, gritty, just trying to survive kind of third, fourth succession war into kind of that pre-clan invasion where they finally starting to find how to fix things again, how to build things again, and how did that influence the development of the artwork behind the scenes?
I think certainly by 92 to 97, the last years I was there, I was spending significantly more time on Shadow and developing Earthbound as well. The look and feel was then determined more by the guys that were running at that point. Jim had taken over. Certainly Dwayne Luce was doing a lot, was still doing a lot of work. But like Mike Jackson's Battletech is far cleaner and more pristine than the one that we were drawing years earlier.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, if that's where the narrative was taking it, then that's what it made sense for that to occur. Mm-hmm. Certainly when I jumped in, everything was in short supply, and there was a reason everything was chewed up, because they couldn't fix things. So
yeah.
You cobbled things together. So as the narrative and the universe got more successful and worked things out, as you said, then it made sense that the visuals would echo that.
Yeah. The next thing I wanted to ask was the characters. You know, it seems from the outside looking in that your niche was more kind of drawing the characters than the machines. You know, is that an accurate read? And kind of how did you find your balance, you know, between those two elements of the universe?
Yeah, if I was an actor, I'd be a character actor. I would be a lead actor. I like drawing characters. I like people and things that are lived in. That's part of the story. You could draw, you know, 3/4 profile turned against a brick wall 300 times, and certainly I probably did. But you want him to be doing something else. So maybe he's eating a sandwich. Maybe he's making a cigarette. Maybe he's loading a gun. You have to be adding to the story besides just the look of the guy.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, yeah, I did a lot of the characters. I certainly enjoyed drawing them next when I had a chance to.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the last ones that I really liked was there's a couple of mechs underwater. I think there's a coral reef down by the feet.
Okay.
And it was sort of a fun exercise. Or I was playing with lights and darks and smokes. So you'd have a really dynamic composition, but there'd be smoke and stuff happening behind it.
Okay.
I mean, I still like drawing that stuff. But for whatever reason, I did a lot of the characters. And that was true of each one of the lines I worked on.
Yeah.
I did just about all the NPCs in Shadowrun. I did all the archetypes, except for a couple. And I did a lot of the characters in archetypes in Earthbound as well. So I did, when we did Renegade Legion, it was fun to finally design some for uniforms. And I think I did some of those with the clan books as well. There's a whole bunch of pilots and stuff at the back of the clan books that I made up all those uniforms and such. And that was fun.
Were there any favorite characters that you liked drawing, or just when it came out, you're just like, all right, I nailed the personality of that guy or lady?
I remember really emphasizing the characters in some of the Battletech scenario books. Grey Death Legion, for example, I think was a really strong set of characters. And I made an effort to do a title page with all their heads on it, and they all had a special uniform that went together. And I remember being quite proud of how that particular product turned out.
And it's certainly in the later years and in the mid years, it's very clear that for a lot of the characters, there are famous personalities that were used as templates for those characters. I'm curious if that was the same for you early in the day, if you would kind of find reference photos and kind of build off of that for your characters, or if it was.
You do try to be consistent. If somebody had drawn Hans Davion, when you draw him again, he needs to look like the pre-existing version of Hans. I know I did Theo Kurita on one of the book covers, and I think I also did a couple of black and white drawings of him. I did all the Lao guys in the color Lao book at one point, or at least a bunch of the main Lao characters, and hopefully they stayed sort of consistent with that.
Yeah. You
would read the description and try to get a picture in your head. Oh, this guy sounds like Charles Bronson. So you might do something that has a little of that in it, or maybe it's you can imagine Taxi Driver, you know, it's young De Niro. So maybe you're going to try something with a little bit of that, a little bit of a visual cue to pull it together. But most of the time, the characters I drew, except for like named characters like the Grey Death Legion, they were one-offs. Certainly the guys in the periphery were, that might have been the only time they were drawn. So you just try to make them as interesting as possible.
Definitely. Well, I'd like to pull up a couple that I have saved here and just kind of chat about them, some that stood out for me. Let me find my folder. So we'll start with this one, which was a favorite, and you already mentioned it. Maybe you can kind of talk to us about the inspiration, kind of putting this piece together, and what was kind of going through your head.
Yeah, that was what I was just talking about. Yeah. I wanted to draw a picture of a fellow that would relate to the viewer, like this could be you. The guy's clearly a mech warrior. He's been injured. He's getting battlefield triage. He's inside of some sort of a bunker. There's wreckage all around him, and yet he still looks confident and like he's gonna drag his beat up leg back out onto the field in a couple of minutes as soon as he can.
Yeah. I always looked at this and I was like, those are some hell of a painkillers. That guy.
Oh, yeah. I don't know what's happened to his leg, but it can't be pretty.
Yeah, no kidding.
Awesome. I like the field surgery kit. Looks like a toolbox.
Definitely.
He's welding his leg back together.
Yeah, pulling something together, getting all that muscle and sinew. Well, this was, we'll switch to the other one. So the old archer. This is a big favorite. You see it on yours?
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. Yeah, it'd be cool. It'd be cool to see what that background would have been. I love this, and kind of all the panels off, and it's a good piece.
I sometimes figure that I should finish it at some point. Put in a hangar bay of some sort, with more of the mechs behind it. So mm-hmm. you're seeing through scaffoldings and such, and other vehicles that are, or other mechs that are already that are either being worked on or are ready to go back out into battle.
Well, we have some funds. We have some funds saved up through that community fund, the Gallery 3025. And so, if you got the time to do it, let me know, and I commission that in a heartbeat.
The little guy on the scaffolding on the right has got a little tiny stogie as well. That's a big drawing too. It's got to be 14 inches wide by maybe 18 inches tall. And it's on vellum, so it's a plastic film. It was drawn with tech pens, which is why it's so flipping clean. And if you made a mistake, you could take an X-Acto knife and literally scrape the ink off the plastic, not too hard, or you'd go through the plastic.
That was actually right into my next question. Was I was always been curious, kind of how, before the digital age, how these paintings or these drawings were transferred into the digital for printing.
The black and white stuff was shot on stat cameras. Okay. We had stat cameras at the old pass as well as the new one on Cermak, where you do big elaborate black and white shots, and then you would cut them and paste them down on the boards for the books. And then the boards would go up and get photographed and made into plates and printed.
Wow.
Even during the time I was there, we went from cutting galley type and pasting it up to sending complete discs to printers just to make the plates wrap the disc. And in between, we had stages where if you were doing a cover, you would do a marker comp on top of a black and white graphic and indicate this should have a fatty around it, an outline around it. This should be this color. This should be this color. Add this treatment. And then they would send back, somebody would cut and paste all those little elements and send it back to you as a finished piece of film.
Wow. And was that the same for the color paintings, that it was,
was just for the black and white, or for the covers. For the paintings, everything had to either fit on an early scanner, so it'd be small, or it would be shot as a transparency, which is essentially a large color slide at gamma, and then we could work off the color slide. It would be scanned and dropped into the computer, and we could work with it that way.
Wow. Incredible.
We didn't start doing digital color really until, I guess, the housebooks had some simple digital work in it. But early, by mid 90s, we're doing digital logos and things that stayed intact rather than setting them off to be assembled.
Gotcha.
Well, a lot of the chewed up type and stuff, we would take a sheet of Xerox, crumble it up, get those cool textures, and then photograph that, and then reverse the text through it. That's how you get chew up lettering.
Interesting.
Yeah, you just did what you could.
Well, here's a character one. This one always stood out to me as a lot of personality.
Red Jack Ryan.
Yeah. That was a good one.
It's funny. His costume is almost like a Renaissance thing.
Mm-hmm.
He's got the puppy sleeves and all the weird little intricate paddings. And yet he's got a little Zippo and he's smoking a stogie.
Yeah, there was a, I'm curious in terms of the, you know, how you envision, because there's a lot of interpretations. It hasn't been super consistent in terms of what the cooling vest looked like. You know, we have the big honking refrigerator on your head, you know, Nora helmets that, that fortunately I've seen some revision over time, but yeah. And then we have, you know, some barely there, you know, cooling vest. I'm curious if, you know, what those visuals were like to you. And,
I think this guy's stuff is just, high military fashion from wherever he's from. It's not,
yeah. Oh yeah.
It's not really a cooling vest, if you will. It's more just sort of, outland type
Yeah, certainly it made me think of it. I assume this was kind of his casual wear, but
the like I said, I'm looking at it and thinking that the little puppy sleeves and stuff look Florentine to me.
Yeah, but looks solid. And then this one,
Rockabilly. Oh, that's I have to do a painting here for somebody. I'm trying to think of her name. She was on the cover of the
I can help you out, but I'm
Power, look. Power Path of Glory cover. It's it's escaping me right now. But she's on the cover of Lori Kalmar?
Yeah,
Kalmar?
You got it. All right.
Something good like job. That.
Your memory. I'm impressed. My memory does not work as well. Things 30 years ago were lost in the ether.
It is a long time ago, but look, it's got some like it's of its time. It's got postmodern little hatches flying in the sky behind her, and sort of the graphics like a Pat Nagel drawing. It's very high contrast, and I think it is, like I said, of its time.
Yeah, this next one was a Mech Warrior one. That was one that I really enjoyed back in the day. Good style there. Good 80s style.
Chill Tuesday or Flock of Seagulls hair. Huge hands. I know that's an issue. And her feet are a little funky, but it's an interesting pose.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's got little marks on her hands like Mickey Mouse gloves.
Too funny. This one was
one of the Bandit Kings.
Yeah.
I think they had a color version in too.
Yep, he was on the cover of
Shrapnel.
Yep.
Yeah, I was just inside. They've been Shrapnel.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a great personality, great look. And then we have the, here's your Theodore.
Yes, that was the first cover painting I ever did.
Awesome.
And I still have it downstairs somewhere.
Very cool.
Bob Charette, and that's really early, trying to do typography, blending the, bending the type, and I think PageMaker to make that happen. And then a little bit of a toothbrush splatter behind the circle.
Mm-hmm. Were there other covers that you did? I didn't find any kind of when I was doing the search.
It was always a little tough to get cover work because we had a lot of good cover painters. And because a cover takes a couple of weeks, and during that time you could do a dozen black and whites.
Right.
I'm looking at the cover and realizing that the saber or the cantata up there on top, I think, was painted by Dana. Possibly for one of the Clavel projects because we had the Clavel books.
Okay.
At one point, but yeah, I painted a cantata, and then there's that gun that was used all over the place. It's we had that in the office, and it shot little yellow plastic bullets.
That's funny. That's awesome.
And it became canon.
Love it. But here we got Carlisle himself.
Yes, looking a little like Dick Van Dyke to me with 1980s hair.
Yeah, most of the interpretations are Owen Wilson. They think he was based on Owen Wilson's, which there's definitely some modern takes on Grayson that
would he even have been born?
He wouldn't have been born by then. That's why I was
7 or 8. Right?
Yeah, I always chuckle when people are like, "Oh, he's based off Owen Wilson." I was like, "Well, not the original, but there are some new illustrations on him that definitely, ring in that direction."
He's giving you the blue steel look.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. And then we got the CCG.
Yep. Yeah. The color, the BattleTech card game.
Yeah,
that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, what was that era like? And kind of bringing that in.
Well,
certainly the beginning. Were you illustrating for Magic before BattleTech?
I had just started. In fact, and I don't like to reflect upon it too much, but all of us, Jim, Joel, we were all asked to be what would have been alpha artists for Magic because we had been in the industry for years at that point.
Yeah.
And Jordan Ward said, "Hey, that's competition. You can't work for them." And yeah. 4 or 5 years later, they changed their mind. And at that point, I started doing Magic cards, and I did them for the remainder of the time Jasper was there. And when the BattleTech card game came out, I did as many of them as they would send my way as well, and had a lot of fun having the opportunity to paint some BattleTechs. And I made them as colorful as possible because, you know, you're painting coaches' games. You want them to read well when they shrink down.
Definitely. So,
they have heavy outlines, so the details hang, hold up, and then some pretty bright colors so that the details are there as well.
That's awesome. And for those that are kind of listening closer to the release of this episode, Jeff was gracious enough to sign a bunch of BattleTech CCG cards that I'm going to be using as prizes and giveaways for an upcoming online tournament. So if you guys have any interest in playing the game, you don't even need the cards, but you can play online. So just hop in that BattleTech CCG Facebook group and I'll be making announcements there within the next month or so. But with some awesome prizes, signed cards. Joel was nice enough to sign some as well. I'm trying to find some other ones and then we'll try to get some tokens made for the game as well. All kinds of fun stuff. But yeah, that'll be good. And
I'd like to know about how it goes.
Definitely, I will. This was one that stood out. I just led the character on this one.
Oh, that guy is fun. I don't. Why does he bring a Edwardian Joker's jacket? I don't know.
is the Riddler's future personality there?
Right, the Riddler.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
He's got the pop collar, which we all had to wear back then. But yeah, he's a nice looking drawing. I haven't seen that in a long, long time, and I kind of like the sort of erratic line work. There's some blobs of ink here and there which give it more character, I think.
Definitely. There's some great phases there. That was just a small sampling, everybody, but yeah. It was very cool. Well, certainly the 80s hair was very prominent in those early illustrations. When you're looking back, is that oh man, can you imagine being in your 30s, 20s, and you're like, God damn, those 1980s style is back again. It's kind of cycled through the inner sphere of culture like 100 times by now. That's too funny.
No, but, some things do come back like that.
Exactly. It was only recently that in my head it clicked, because I was always like, oh, they're drawn. It's like that they were drawn in the 80s. So it's BattleTech hair. So it's kind of retrospective. And, where I was having a conversation, it just clicked in the moment where I was like, well, kids these days are wearing horrible 90s fashion. So what's the stop in the 30s, 20s that this was the fashion in the 30s, 20s? It's not the 1980s. It's just the 30s, 20s happened to look a lot like the 1980s.
Back then. It's just throwback.
Exactly. Well, what was, I'm curious kind of your transition now. And so kind of going into the later years of BattleTech, and you've gotten given that green light to kind of do Magic, and certainly kind of following you on social media, you're doing a ton of stuff for Magic these days. What was that transition like? Did you go straight from BattleTech to Magic, or was, what was?
No, I was, it was a freelance gig for me. Okay. I started doing them around 97.
Mm-hmm.
So it had to be just about as I was leaving FASA. And I continued doing it through 2003. So it was just a short little window. But remarkably, 20 years later, I started attending shows. People collect alterations where you're painting on a card.
Yeah.
Probably around 2016, I started getting cards in the mail from Italy and Spain. Can we do an alteration on this? I'm thinking, I'm not going to wreck the card. I'm painting on the card. So we wreck the card.
Yeah.
And that turned into some invites to go to some shows overseas. And a couple of years after that, I sent a note to General Fireball about how one goes about attending these events.
Mm-hmm.
And within 3 weeks, I was on my way to Santiago, Chile, because, that's where you want to be for a show. And I had a ball.
Yeah.
I was going all over the world ever since. In the meantime, I had continued to do RPG work. and still do from time to time. You work on what comes up. I was certainly working with FASA 2.0, for lack of a better concept, for a while. I like doing sequential narrative imagery, and RPGs are a really good place to do that. You want to tell a story. There are stories to be told in the games.
Yeah. Definitely. Well, it's been fun to kind of, see, it's good to see the active Twitters, that are just kind of sharing all the creative stuff. You do a great job kind of maintaining that there. I enjoyed the kind of the mecha that you kind of popped up. There was a Zeus, kind of a magic version of the Zeus, which was fun to see recently, but I'll throw it up here for people that are watching on YouTube. They can kind of see that art. I'm curious in terms of the, we talked a little bit about the book covers, having done the one for Heir to the Dragon there, certainly from what I can find, almost all your work was all in black and white. Were you also doing some in color, or were you doing your illustrations in black and white and then other people doing the coloring side of it for you?
For the longest time, the books were just black and white. We finally got them to do tip and color plates with the house books. Yeah. And we would get 8 or 16 pages of color, and we would divvy it up, and that was a chance to do some color work. But the meat, the bulk of the work was still black and white. All the time I was there, I must have done it over 1,000 times. Okay. But maybe a couple hundred color pieces when everything was said and done for that period.
Yeah.
While we're talking about the art and stuff, I would be remiss to not mention how important the studio was. When I first started there, it was Dana and Todd and I, and we did everything we could to knock those books together and get them out the door as well and as fast as we could. Joel came on, and Jim came on. It allowed us a little bit of breathing room. We were still working like crazy, but we're also pushing each other visually. And so there was a bit of a competition going, which enhanced the books and enhanced all of our skills. One guy would be really terrific with dynamic poses. Another guy might have some sort of terrific graphic design in his work. And being around all of that enhanced all of our work. And I look back on the studio days very, very fond. We all learned a lot of things. And it's all on paper. You just have to flip through the books and you'll see all of it.
That's awesome. Do you remember, what is it, around the 20-year update? Is that when Joel came on? I'm trying to remember back to my conversation. But
I think I've been on staff about 5-6 years at that point, so it must have been around 90, 91.
Okay.
I think Shadowrun came out around 92nd edition was 92, so Joel was in already at that point.
Yeah.
So...
Can you think of any illustrations from them, from your peers, over at BattleTech that really inspired you, that, just stood out? It's like, oh man, I got to raise my game.
Well, Joel was a big fan of Joseph Fleming Cole, and he would bring these 1920s, 1930s textures to his composition, but he would also add 1970s, 80s comics dynamism to the compositions. So he would have these super dynamic poses of people twisting, but they were all beautifully rendered with all these 1940s textures. And I always thought those were lovely. Certainly there was a lot of work of his like that in Earth Dawn. But he drew each one of us from time to time in BattleTech, and those were always fun pieces to see. Jim was a fantastic designer. All of his pieces looked finished. Regardless of the context, the page that they're around or surrounding them, they look like self-contained little images. And I always admire that about his work. There's a universality, is that a word, that resonates in the drawings.
And it was interesting in my...
Brad Street had fantastic graphic design and still does. Certainly after he left RPGs and moved on to doing his comic covers, his graphic design is as important as black and white render. And I also found that very striking. Janet Alessia as well. Her black and white textures and graphic design were beautiful to see. And were always inspirational.
It was interesting, and when I was talking to Joel and how he kind of brought up how you guys would a lot of time tag team, and I always assumed when I looked at a drawing that, you know, it was one person that took it from start to finish. But, you know, he was talking about how, you know, there was kind of staged. Some people would do the penciling and then another person might do the inking, you know, and finishing. You know, how often did that happen? Is that common in the art world or in that
I
kind of
think
culture?
Joel did that more than the rest of us, but he was always interested in collaborating. So I think that lent itself to that. When you're doing as many pieces as you are, working on somebody else's composition changed the way you approached it because you want to do it really well. And you're also approaching things from a different point of view than you might normally be assuming in the work that you're doing in rows. So that was always fun. I know I did a couple of pieces with Joel. I also did Liz Danforth and I for one of the anthologies. I did a pencil composition. She did a pencil composition. We switched pieces in the mail. I am Turkey. She and client piece. And that was fun. But it didn't happen as often. You'd wish it would happen more. I mean, think about music. You've got all these performers that we all know and love. And yet, how often are they actually doing a duet with someone? You know, wouldn't it be cool to hear, Sting and Pink do something?
No, I had a very similar experience. My profession is coaching, and I coach rowing specifically. And one of the greatest kind of periods of that was when I had somebody on staff that was a wonderful coach, and the perfect balance of skill and humility, which is, it's hard to find skill and humility in combination in the athletic world. And we talked often and tried as much as we could to try to bounce each ideas off of each other, you know, and talked before about, well, what it would be if we just kind of like took each other's teams for, you know, a month in the middle of the season and kind of coached.
Very
And,
interesting to see
you
how it
know,
works.
unfortunately, the reality of the logistics, because rowing is so logistic intensive, getting boats on the water and kids on the water and off and then practicing, it kind of held that. But it's still an idea I would love to, you know, maybe kind of pursue a little bit in the future if I can find the right collaboration. But I agree. I think, you know, if you get two people that have that kind of creative synergy and have the humility to just kind of let somebody else run with when their early work, it's beautiful things can certainly happen with it. And I'm always fascinated by, you know, projects like, you know, motion pictures with just the vast amount of collaboration that happens on those and how they do it. It's pretty incredible, you know, from the outside looking in. But going back to BattleTech, and with the, you know, were there any from the technology side, you know, we talked about kind of how your focus preference was with the characters, you know, were there any specific mechs that, you know, really you were drawn to as favorites, or any mech design that you contributed yourself, or was that usually the other guys? I think maybe Dana and Luce and
I think
Nelson.
I only designed a couple of mechs for whatever reason. I remember enjoying drawing the Hatchet Man coming through the wall and House Davion. That was fun. I thought the Awesome had a nice design. I thought the Atlas had certainly a very nice design. But I would you, when you had a chance to draw them, if there wasn't something in the text specifically, you'd try to find a mech that you hadn't seen drawn and try and figure out a way to make it work. And so, you know, we were all inspired by Duane's beautiful drawings and then tried to breathe some life into them by putting them into the scene. You never quite knew how they would turn out, but it was always fun.
Yeah, there's a couple, you know, kind of drawing that's cool ideas that I have for commissions for the gallery of, you know, either just, you know, mech warrior kind of hanging out the cockpit hatch and kind of, you know, trying to direct the technicians for, you know, field repairs, or, you know, I have a fun one that, you know, I'm trying to kind of visualize of, you know, maybe, you know, a lance of mechs kind of gathered in a circle in a clearing in a wood, and everyone's out of their cockpit, but they're in various positions. So one might be kind of like sitting on the top of the cockpit, and another mech might have kind of positioned the mech's hands like, you know, here, so he could climb out of the cockpit and sit on the hand while he's chatting with the
Sure,
other
sure,
people.
sure.
You know, definitely some cool things that could be done
Well,
with
you could
those.
have a version of the mech, and the guy's manipulated it so his hand is up near his face. He's painting essentially like battle
Perfect.
flags
His kills
on
from
the
the
edge of
last
his
battle.
jaw. You know, I got little kill marks.
Definitely. That would be awesome.
An image I always wanted to do, never got around to, was would have been like a game screen. You'd do a horizontal painting and have 8 or 9 mechs coming through fog. sort of across the battlefield, like first thing in the morning or something.
Yeah. Oh, I love it.
That's an effective way to handle the mechs and their scale and the idea of facing them.
Yeah.
It would be terrifying.
Definitely. Yeah. It's there's a picture I took at one of my regattas, and we had it was a horrible fog. It was like maybe like 100 feet visibility or so. And so it delayed the event quite a bit. And then as the fog was lifting, it was kind of just enough that you could kind of row safely or race safely. And one of my favorite pictures was just a picture of, there was like two patches of fog and there was like one clearing, and you can kind of see the boats kind of coming out of one patch of fog and kind of disappearing into the other. But fog is a great element to kind of use, mm-hmm. you know, in those illustrations. And I've talked a couple of times with Daniel Bruins, who is a very talented animator and storyteller. And one of the great shots in one of his animations is a mech kind of coming out of the smoke. And he was talking about just how many times that shot crashed his computer just because the rendering, you know, realistic smoke is so challenging. But yeah, I think that would be a great illustration to kind of see, you know, in there. The kind of move forward. I've seen posts on Twitter of kind of, you know, saying, oh, I'd love to kind of do another BattleTech illustration. You know, is that something that we can see? Do you have an idea of kind of what you would want to tackle if you kind of revisited the universe?
Well, I'd certainly enjoy drawing some mech warriors in the cockpits, because I think there's more to do and see inside of the cockpits.
Yeah.
When the action is unfolding and or afterwards, perhaps. But you know, like I said, I didn't draw a lot of mechs. I think it'd be fun to do some you know, grand battles. Or like I said, you know, this thing with the mechs coming out of the fog, something that's inspired us too. One of the things I liked about the challenge painting I did for the Firefly, I did a challenge magazine cover of one of the battle mechs, and Firestarter. It was a Firestarter. Mm-hmm. And it's just sort of like a character shot, but it's all red and glowing a little bit. And there's a quietness to it, like, is it about to hurt somebody, or is it coming out of it? Is it about to ending? Or,
yeah.
I like the idea of implied might and such. And so the moment right before something's going to happen is often fun to explore.
Yeah, there's a great Firestarter picture that Alex Iglesias did. I'll pull it up here. Alex is the lead concept artist for Piranha Games, which handles the MechWarrior games now. And this was his cover that he did for one of the kind of short stories, I guess the modern version of Shrapnel.
Ah, cool.
Yeah.
His the way he's handling the mech, the palette isn't right, but it kind of feels a little like Chappie. Mm. He certainly gets the volume and the way the weight should work as the depth that the robot's moving, which I think is really effective.
Definitely.
Nicely done. you see all the armaments spilling out of the side of his torso, and that's a terrific image. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah, definitely. Possibly war crimes in progress there. Who knows? The fire starters. But excellent. Yeah, there's some good stuff. I know Jim and you had kind of traded some stuff on Twitter. You know, are there still artists, you know, in BattleTech that you keep in touch with?
Mostly the FASA guys, and you know, a handful of the artists that I've already mentioned that I still correspond regularly with the Anfort. I still talk with Larry McDougall. Street went out to Hollywood, so I don't know what Street's doing. Yeah. I know L.A. Williams became a concept guy for movies. The most recent Star Trek movie, for example, has a couple of aliens with some sort of curly Q horns coming out of their sides of their heads, and that's certainly Alan's trademark.
Influence, awesome.
It's cool to see people moving into film and such as well, with their roots in RPGs.
And talk to me, your Goblin seems to be your thing in Magic the Gathering. Kind of what kind of drew you there? Is that kind of your favorite new art to do, or is that just what the people like?
No, they're certainly fun to draw. Yeah. I did 25 paintings. I think 4 or 5 of them are goblins.
Okay.
And for whatever reason, people like them. A lot of the prominence of the goblins as of late, certainly on Twitter, has to do with that Daily Goblin project I was doing. Mm-hmm. I drew close to 500 drawings in a row of various people turning them into goblins. So that has kind of emphasized my fondness, I think,
of goblins. Fair. Fair.
But I did Goblin Fest, I did Goblin Medics, I painted goblins several times for me. And I always thought they were really, I suppose there's a little Ferengi in the way I draw goblins as well, getting back to Star Trek for a moment.
Definitely.
It's a fantasy element. It could be told. It's an excuse to draw giant ears and little green mischievous guys. And what's not to love about that?
Definitely, I agree. Well, this has been fun, Jeff. You know, I appreciate trip down memory lane, and you know, certainly would love to see you kind of revisit BattleTech again. If I can help facilitate that, with the commission, please let me know. I would love to do it. And
if at some point when I have my stuff a little more organized, I could certainly dig out and show you process for a cover to put together, because I still have all the tissues with all the marker counts and stuff, and pencil drawings to final drawings.
I'd love that. That would be a super fun little kind of short video to kind of, you know, and share. And, you know, I would love to see it myself. And
I probably have all the pieces to a variety of development covers. Here's the logo. Here's the marker count. Here's the test
group.
Or with pencils, here's the sketch and here's the final guy. We were all drawing when the clan uniforms came together. And we were all working on them at one point. At one point, I suggested it to Jim, because he ended up doing the final version, you should put your initials in the backpack. And darn if on the sculpt there isn't a J and an N on the back of the sculpture.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, one of the members of the community who also sponsored this channel through his online sales, Fortress Games and Miniatures, Robert Ash, his goal and actually kind of his, part of the impetus behind creating the Realtail company is to help fund his other goal of creating a BattleTech museum. And he has a massive collection. And so certainly if there's anything, spring cleaning, yeah, I'm sure he would just be, like a kid in a candy store. He'd be delighted to kind of get that and share with the community. I think he after retirement, he said, which I think is going to be in the next 5 years. And so he's down in the North Carolina area by the Winston-Salem kind of, urban suburbs. And that'd be cool. But if there's any spring cleaning, there's a destination to kind of keep in mind.
I know that I've got marker comps for all those various mercenary units that ended up in Berkeley and various other things. All those color paintings of the clan pilots and stuff are still around. All the black and whites, like just put all of those in there somewhere.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah.
Anyway, at some point, I'd like to put them together so people could see it.
Yeah. Well, that would be a great way. And I'd be happy to kind of make a video, go through it with you. That'd be, and share it with as many people as on YouTube. But very cool. Well, thank
you. It's a pleasure to be remembered.
Yeah. And everyone else, your illustration has certainly captured the imagination of young Travis, back in the day, and, as kind of
captured my imagination as well, which is one of the reasons there's so much of all of us in our work.
Awesome. Awesome.
I'm glad that still resonates.
Definitely. Well, thanks again, Jeff. And everyone, thanks for listening, and we'll catch you on the next episode.
Thanks for keeping the faith. Cheers.